Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. We often question how Montana is going to power its future, how the country is going to power its future. Our future projections are for much more energy usage than we have right now. Is that going to be available? How are we addressing that? There have been some reforms. The Montana Environmental Policy Act in the 2025 legislative session, there was a suite of bills that revised that. What was behind that? Critics say it weakened environmental review and public transparency, but supporters of that say it's important to understand that NEPA is procedural, not regulatory, and especially for the courts to understand that. What else is on the plates? I'm talking energy today as well. Mining, critical minerals. Yeah, we got a ton of stuff. And guess who's with us? Sonia Nowakowski, Cody.
Nice.
Director of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. I'm a little geeky right now.
You are? Well, yeah. It's good to be geeky.
I guess.
You learn things this
That's
way.
That's what we want to do as well. I've been working on this for a little while. Sonia Nowakowski is joining us here, Director of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. You know, she's got a background there, of course. She was a division administrator of air, energy, and mining. And then 15 years, she worked with the Montana Legislature's research office, doing a lot of the same stuff, environmental and energy policy, including drafting legislation, advising lawmakers. She knows how a lot of that works, and joining us here today to catch up on a ton of stuff. Good morning, Director Nowakowski. How are you, Sonia?
Good morning, Tom. I'm so excited to be here and to geek out with you and everybody else this morning.
That's good. It's okay that because you're guilty by association, Sonia. If you're a geek, then good. Join us today, right?
Yeah. You got it. My teenage son accuses me of being a geek pretty much every day, so I'll take it.
Yeah, don't change. You know, there's a ton of places to start, and I'm just going to ask you, where do you want to start? You know, we've got some things I talked about. We talk about energy a lot. The math is not adding up. There's new sources out there to explore. I think you've got nuke and geothermal on your plate. Critical minerals, MEPA reform, but this is stuff on the ground, Sonia. So I guess there is some natural excitement about what your department is doing, because you guys move the needle on a lot of things.
Great. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. And I think I'd kind of like to start out with where, as Montanans, we're really accustomed to electricity abundance. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we start talking seriously about the electricity situation that we find ourselves in here in Montana and regionally today. And this is a big reason for why Governor Gianforte established an energy task force, which I have the honor of being the chair of. And it's about talking about the big picture. This isn't just about new loads. This isn't just about data centers. Montana is in a place where we have got to have some serious conversations about new generation. I put some numbers out there. In 2019, nameplate capacity in Montana, it was 6,314 megawatts. That's like actual energy generated. And that translated to about 27.5 million megawatt hours. And I think most of your listeners are aware there's a difference between what we call nameplate capacity, or the maximum generating potential, and then actual energy generated. But let's jump ahead to today. And nameplate capacity is now at like 8,700 or so megawatts. But actually energy generated has declined, and we're at 25.3 million megawatt hours. At the same time, you got to keep in mind that about a third of electricity generated in Montana is sent out of state. And when you put that in perspective now, we've got a 15.6% increase in nameplate capacity, but we've got an 8.2% decrease in actual energy generation. And that's what we've got, fewer firm resources. We saw Colstrip 1 and 2 close, and we've seen more variable resources with lower capacity factors come online. Couple that with in-state electricity sales increasing, I think, by about 6%. We've seen peak demand increase by 9%. The math is really problematic here.
Yes.
And so is that trajectory.
Yes, it is. How do you gather? Because energy is complex. There are a lot of players involved in it. rightfully so. Are they convinced that we are approaching this cliff of brownouts and blackouts?
And that's what I think it's important that is a big part of this task force is education. And yeah. And that's why I'm here this morning, too, is Montanans need to talk about this. We really always have taken energy for granted for many, many years. And that's what we're at a place where we can't take all of this for granted. We can accommodate a growing demand as well, but we can't do it at the expense of affordable, reliable power for Montanans. And so that really ties us into having some hard conversations. I mean, we've got to talk about the Public Service Commission and their role when it comes to setting tariffs. We've also got to talk about opportunities for entities that maybe don't want to be served by a regulated utility. Maybe they want to work with merchant plants. They want to build behind the meter. Maybe they want to dabble in markets. But we've got to have some clear regulation. And then on all fronts, I think we've got to set the politics aside. We can't pull up the drawbridges. We can't say we're closed to new development. We don't want this kind of generation. We only want this kind of generation. We don't want to serve new loads. We only want to serve what's here now. I think the task force really feels the weight of that. They know we have to develop some recommendations that are going to shape this future. We've got to talk about our role in the regional marketplace. We've got to talk about transmission. And these are big conversations, and so I'm excited to be a part of this right now.
Yeah, you know, and that's why I asked the question about how well these players know the landscape, because it has become very political, and that seems to be almost the top job, is to get through the politics of it. People, and I know there are groups that are opposed to a lot of new energy projects, and, you know, I don't want to get too far into that. I think they've done a disservice in halting a lot of projects just unnecessarily, but they may feel another way. But they've got to have a willingness. We all have to have a willingness to come to that table and work on a more permanent solution. How do you create that? Because it's so political right now.
Right, and that's what I think the governor's task force is really, we've zeroed in on some problem statements. Now we're looking at strategies and solutions. But we have to remember our top objective, and that is to increase the supply of affordable and reliable energy options for Montana. And we've got to think about that addressing our current needs, but we've got to ensure some sustainability for the future. And everything's got to be on the table. I'm really seeing four themes in the task force with that in mind. Consumer perspectives. You got to protect the ratepayers. Energy governance, that maybe we need to take a hard look at our Public Service Commission's role, some of the laws that are in place, some of the incentives that are in place, and have some conversations. Also, Montana's role in a regional marketplace. I want us to continue to be an energy exporter. And how do we do that? And how do we still protect Montanans? And then finally, innovation. I think we have all of those broad perspectives on the task force. But at the heart of it, it's that affordability, reliability, sustainability conundrum. And we've got to take that, and we've got to accelerate the deployment of energy resources. And that can include transmission. That can include geothermal. That can include natural gas plants. It can include a combination of flexible loads and energy efficiency. We've just got to build more headroom in the system.
Director of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality, Sonia Nowakowski, is with us here. She's been director since July of 2024, but previously in that office for a number of years, and then worked in the Montana legislature, as I noted, Sonia. And you know, so you got an understanding of policy, also, you know, the technical regulatory framework and things like that. I'm gonna peel into, and thank you for coming on, I'm gonna peel into innovation here a little bit more, because, you know, we can't rely on the next great invention to bail us out of a problem we're creating now. We can hope for those kinds of things, that technology will come and create some efficiencies. We kind of singled out nuclear and geothermal, you know, and there's hydrogen, and then, you know, also the carbon capture thing. There's a lot of ideas out there that are surfacing. You know, what do you think is going to land and have a real meaningful impact?
Right. And that's, I was just having this conversation earlier this week with somebody who I consider one of my finest energy advisors. And we were talking a lot. We have to have some conversations about natural gas. There's going to be a gap that we have to bridge, and it's going to be natural. It's going to probably be natural gas. I think we've got to talk about pipeline capacity and increasing pipeline capacity and probably bringing some natural gas plants online. I think longer term, nuclear is certainly rising to the top. We're seeing a lot of interest in that. However, I do think Wyoming and Utah are a little bit ahead of Montana on that nuclear front. One of the key pieces for me is also transmission. It's kind of that chicken and egg conundrum that we're in. If, you know, transmission first, generation first, which comes first, which comes second? And if you look at Montana's transmission map, it hasn't really changed a lot since the Montana-Alberta tie line in 2013. And that's, you know, demand for energy and peak loads have increased in the state, and the characteristics of Montana's generating fleet has really dramatically shifted. And that's got to change. And so I think there's one project that's currently underway under the Major Facility Siting Act review here at DEQ, and that's Grid United's North Plains Connector.
Right.
And I think that's a game changer.
Yeah.
I mean, a 420-mile high-voltage DC transmission line that goes from Colstrip to North Dakota connects the eastern and the western electric grids. Game changer.
You know, and got a couple of minutes here before we hit a break. Let's stay with that. There's a public comment period, and we've had those gentlemen, Grid United, on the air. Again, they've got a lot of things in place, and I think they've done things, you know, a step-by-step approach. So people are commenting on that right now. I mean, what do we need to know? What should we look out for, be concerned about, or be informed about here?
And that's what it is out for public comment right now. And we are in a regulatory role, so I've also got to be thoughtful about what I say here because we're taking a look at that right now with our federal partners, reviewing that. But I think Grid United has really come in and done a good job of talking. We all know how important private property rights are in Montana, and they have done a really good job communicating and educating about this line, about what its impacts are going to look like. And they've done been very thoughtful about limiting environmental impacts, looking at their routes, being willing to be flexible a little bit in different areas of their route. These are hard things and big things and expensive things. And they've really taken the time and invested the money, I think, to do it right. And so really looking forward to reviewing all those public comments, taking those into consideration in the MEPA and the NEPA documents, and then coming out with a final certificate to get things going for this project.
How far away before geothermal makes a meaningful presence?
Oh, I think that's really exciting. And we see the legislature's Energy and Technology Interim Committee kind of also pressing on the geothermal front. At the state level, we're seeing some agencies come together. Right now, and this is really geeking out, when you look at the laws on the books, they aren't as clear as they could be when it comes to geothermal. There's some discrepancy of what is the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation's role? What's the role of the Board of Oil and Gas? When we're talking about who owns the heat, who owns the subsurface, who owns the surface? So there's some things we've got. I think the legislature has some room to step in and provide some clarity on the regulatory front. I think we are seeing a lot of increased interest in places, you know, we have Warm Springs. We have different areas, Fairmont, where they're taking a serious look at that. And huge shout out to Montana Tech and the Montana Bureau of Mines and Geology for their leadership on the geothermal front. They are truly positioning Montana to be in a good place that as this increasingly becomes more economically feasible, that Montana will be able to launch.
Yeah, that's good news because, geothermal, I don't know that we know everything we need to know about our Earth, so to speak. And so I think there's concerns about, you know, how geothermal energy in one area can impact something even hundreds of miles away. You know, I guess I'm just I'm curious as to, the approach to that sort of, I guess, consequence that could happen.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and that's really the focus of a lot of the work that the Montana Bureau of Mines and Geology is looking at. Yeah. They're looking at how those water systems underground are connected and what impacts that could have if you tap into certain areas. So they're gathering that data that folks need to ensure that if we move forward, there aren't consequences like that. And so that research is underway, and Montana Bureau of Mines and Geology has really gotten some money behind this and moving that effort forward. But you're spot on. We've got to gather some more information.
Boy, we've talked a little bit about our infrastructure. Transmission lines can take 10 to 15 years to permit and build. So that's why we got to be thinking about those things now. It's the same thing for natural gas generation, 20 years or so thereabouts. That's why we talk about what's appropriate or overburdensome regulations here as well. Our industries are vital to us, not only, you know, from a livable standpoint, but also, you know, energy, especially. Welcome back here. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. I often say if we have affordable energy, we have a much more resilient economy. And so, meeting our energy demands is one, I think, of the key issues in our generation, especially as we see them growing. It's good to have you alongside here today. If you want to, you know, text a message or give a call here, it's 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. Sonia Nowakowski is with us here, our director of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. And Sonia, I mean, that department touches everything. It's air, it's water, it's our ground, it's energy into the future. I imagine it's a little busy for you guys at times.
It certainly is. It's hard work. It's controversial work, but it's meaningful work. Along those lines, my teenage son likes to joke when he reads, after he looks at the headlines in the newspaper, he says, "Well, it does look like pretty much everything is your fault."
Does your teenage son know that you were a disc jockey in a younger life?
He does. He has had to endure some recordings of me, and you know, he's often, I enjoy inflicting my musical choices on him.
Well, congratulations on getting a real job.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's get into MEPA here, the Montana Environmental Policy Act. It was passed in 1971. There's a lot of things that need updating in that. The legislature has tried to address that. A lot of that comes from the Held decision as well. My main concern here is that, as a department, you have to kind of develop some kind of guidance on greenhouse gas analytics in environmental review. And I believe there's just so much uncertainty over that. I don't know that any guideline that you come out with is not going to, you know, meet a lawsuit, because it, how do you accomplish that job with the uncertainty that is provable regarding our climate change?
You bet. Always happy to talk about the Montana Environmental Policy Act, or MEPA. This is something very near and dear to my heart. I worked on it heavily when I worked at Legislative Services for folks like Senator Jim Keene and lobbyists like Leo Berry. I mean, the big guys. And then now it's been so fascinating to work at DEQ and to be charged with implementing MEPA and executing the laws that were put in place. And I've loved learning it and looking at it from those different perspectives. So I will say off the bat that I feel better about MEPA today than I ever have before. I am so proud of the Montana legislature last session and the decisions that they have made to reform MEPA and improve that process and to provide some regulatory certainty. I think we all know the Montana Supreme Court had issued a series of rulings that really pointed us in a direction where we had to develop solutions to reduce that potential litigation and to provide some certainty to Montana businesses, large and small. And the legislature really stepped up and did that. There were five bills that were signed that really made a difference. House Bill 270, that was one sponsored by Representative Katie Zolnikoff. And that clarified the courts could not vacate MEPA permits without properly considering impacts to Montana's economy and private businesses. So that was a huge one. House Bill 285, and that was sponsored by Speaker Lear. And that really reaffirmed the purpose of MEPA, reaffirming, as you pointed out, it's procedural in nature, and it's to share information with policymakers and the public. There was House Bill 291, and that was sponsored by Representative Oblander, and it made it clear that the state of Montana can't adopt air quality standards that are more strict than the federal government. Also, there was House Bill 466, which was Representative John Fitzpatrick. This really also laid the groundwork to bring us in line with what we're seeing at the federal level. And it showed that projects that were exempt from NEPA, or the National Environmental Policy Act, are also exempt from MEPA. And that reduced a lot of red tape and a lot of duplicative processes. And then what you touched on lastly was Senate Bill 221, and that was sponsored by Senator Galt. And it clearly states what emissions are required to be included in this kind of assessment. It really put together a system in place and put some sideboards on what these environmental reviews look like. And that's what we have worked on, is this greenhouse gas guidance document, which we finalized in January. And it outlines a very defensible process for how we look at these decisions. That bill was also written and tailored in a way that it incorporates a very important U.S. Supreme Court decision that came out in late December of 24. And that was the Seven Counties decision. And that is one where it talked about these reviews are about the actual action at hand, that these reviews aren't about the upstream and the downstream impacts. And so the Senate Bill 221 makes very clear, MEPA requires us to examine and talk about direct and indirect impacts. Doesn't mean we talk about upstream and downstream impacts. And that is in line with that U.S. Supreme Court decision. So, for example, that is if we are permitting something related to an oil and gas pipeline, this analysis is focused on just that permit. It's not on the transportation of the oil, the railroad, what emissions come from the railroad or the transportation. And then it's not about the final use of that. You know, we talk about coal. How can I do an analysis and talk about a greenhouse gas assessment when the coal is being burned in China? That is not what MEPA is intended to do. And that U.S. Supreme Court decision, the Seven County Infrastructure decision, lined that out for us. And then Senator Galt stepped in and brought Senate Bill 221 to make sure MEPA is in line with that as well. So I feel like we're in a really good position right now.
You know, I got a couple of minutes here, so I'm going to ask you a general question about how our environment is doing. I don't think it matters. I mean, as you talk about it being political, mm-hmm. These might be good solutions. I still think that they're going to be challenged because I think there's a group out there that is their modus operandi. Mm-hmm. I want to ask that question. How is our environment overall doing?
Yeah, and I think our environment is doing quite well. I mean, our mission at DEQ is to champion a healthy environment for a thriving Montana. And that is what we're doing, and that is what we're seeing. The legislature has put good laws in place to ensure that when we move forward with activities that are impactful to the environment, that we are implementing those in a way that ensures environmental protections. We're doing a great job at that. When we talk about, for example, Montana's mining regulations, those are really reclamation acts. It is ensuring that mining happens in a way that Montanans are protected, and that at the end of the day, when that mine is closed, it is reclaimed and the land is returned. And I'm really pleased to see that working and happening in Montana. I will agree, we haven't always gotten it right. That's why we have places like Zortman Landusky, where the taxpayers are on the hook for the environmental cleanup there.
Yep.
We have Superfund sites like Butte, where we have the Federal Environmental Protection Agency working with a responsible party to course correct there. And I feel like the legislature has responded to that and put laws in place that ensure we can have natural resource development.
I guess I'm sitting here laughing to myself as we're talking with Sonia Nowakowski about she's got kids, raising kids, and related the story about her youngster saying, geez, Mom, I guess everything is your fault. Air quality, water quality, energy planning, mining oversight. I hope he's taking out the garbage, Sonia. At least, you don't have garbage duty at home, do you?
No, he's a good kid.
Oh, good, good.
Chores.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And I appreciate that. And that keeps it real, doesn't it? I mean, being a mom.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I always talk, that's my number one job. And the hardest job I have is being a mom.
Oh, gosh. challenges nowadays, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you live in a pretty technical world too. So yeah. Director of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality since July 2024, as I stated, had been previously a division administrator there, air, energy, and mining, and then 15 years with the Montana Legislature's Research Office. And Sonia, that shows up an awful lot in how you understand policy and address policy. And with that, we're going to take a call, and we'll get on. You know, we've talked about MEPA. One thing we haven't hit yet is mining and critical minerals here in Montana, so we'll do that here in just a bit. But got a call in here, 866-627-5483. Text a message, 781-627-5483. Over to Hamilton again, KLYQ in 1240 AM. Thank you guys for being along. And Skip, you're on the air with Director Nowakowski.
Well, thank you, Tom. And ma'am, at least we know now who's responsible if there's anything wrong with our environment in the state of Montana. It's all your fault. And so I just figured that when I heard you describing those bills that went through our legislative session last time, that was the best explanation. And you just lined it right out of all of the bills that were really smart for them to pass. I would suggest that there was even legislators in that session that did not understand as clearly as you described all of those bills when they voted on them. I appreciate your explanations. I did hear you bring up the PSC a couple of times. I'm real familiar with some of the things that the PSC does. And one other subject that I'm pretty familiar with is, for instance, the mining situation that we're going to be experiencing here in the Bitterroot Valley. That would be a whole nother question for you. But I'd like you to please tell us, what do you think the PSC could do better, whether it be the elected commissioners as a group or the attitude that the whole group should have about the future of our regulating, especially Northwest Energy. If there's anything in particular that you can think of that they could do better, and then whisper it in their ear, because right now the PSC has been a soap opera for the last year.
Skip,
you brought it up a couple times, and I'll leave it at that, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Skip. I appreciate that. I appreciate the question. I'm going to throw a caveat out there, too, that, Sonia, I know you work with the PSC as a department director. So I'm sure your conversation for a lot of understandable reasons is going to be a little bit guarded here.
You bet. And that's what I do appreciate. The question, I think there is a recognition the Public Service Commission in Montana has a really important role. They make sure that rates are reasonable, and they also have to make sure that regulated utilities get some sort of return. And it's not an enviable position to be in.
Yeah.
And especially as we talk about these new large loads, they're going to be responsible for setting tariffs. I think they need to be really thoughtful about those tariffs and what they look like, and really open-minded. It's important to look at what other states have done, what other we've heard on the Energy Task Force some really good examples, Basin Electric, of how they have addressed large loads and how they have established tariffs where those utilities can serve these larger loads while still ensuring residential rates are protected. And so I don't envy them, certainly for being in that position, but that is something they need to step up and do, and it's going to be tough. But I think they need to listen to all the sides. I think they need to work closely with their staff. They have some outstanding analysts and staff members there who have been there for years. And I think that's a great place to start, is looking at when and if we've been told Northwestern Energy is going to submit a tariff, to taking a hard look at that and finding the sweet spot for Montanans.
Thanks, Skip, for the call. I appreciate that. I've got it around here somewhere. I am going to be talking to Blue LeFave here from Northwestern Energy, and then John Schaefer as well. They have got an integrated resource plan, work plan for 2026. We'll talk more about that document. It's a key document moving forward as well. So just to let people know, that's going to be a show on Monday, but I'll be talking to them at length here a bit later on this afternoon. I'm a big fan of the Black Butte Copper Mine. I think they went above and beyond technology-wise, so to speak. They finally got a clearance from the Montana Supreme Court. But I guess go back to critical minerals. Copper now has been labeled as a critical mineral. I'm surprised at the headwinds that never seem to get behind our mining community. They're always in front of them. And even this lawsuit, you know, as Black Butte did more than was required, that was the genesis of the complaint, is that, wow, you're so far ahead of us. We don't understand what that works. Got to hold off on this. It's hard, I think, to move forward with certainty for a lot of businesses, especially those that are putting out a huge outlay to do business in Montana, when they see some uncertainty from the courts in that regard. I want to talk about mining critical minerals, that opportunity, but I think that overshadows it in a way, too.
Yeah, no, those are great points, and that's what I have to certainly brag on the DEQ staff when we talk about Tintina and Black Butte, because so grateful for that Supreme Court ruling that said we got it right. Our scientists, our geologists who spent hours and hours on that, they got it right, and that's what they found, that sweet spot. They were able to demonstrate that you can mine and you can do so in a way that is protective and protective of the environment and ensures that our environment is protected. And so just huge shout out to the DEQ staff, as well as the litigation team that came out ahead on that. So happy with their work. But you're right. There is some uncertainty out there. And so what we're seeing, and particularly on the critical minerals front, I bet I'm having meetings every week with folks who are interested in mining in Montana, with prices the way they are, taking a look at what opportunities are out there. And we're grateful to have those conversations, because it is really important to come right out of the chute, to come meet with us. We call them pre-application meetings. Talk about what you're going to plan. Talk about what you're working on. And then let our experts share with you the information we need to make sure that your permit or that your application is not deficient, that we can process it in a timely way. And I think that's really important when we talk about critical minerals, too. There's a little bit of uncertainty around critical minerals. We've been working with our federal partners, as well as the Montana Mining Association, talking about, are there opportunities out there to create more regulatory certainty when it comes to critical minerals?
And are there? Because, you know, as we see national security interests being, it's squarely on some of these resources that we can provide, I think that adds to the nature of this discussion, doesn't it?
It really does. And one area that I have really keyed in on, if you ask anybody, I'm all about efficiency. Mm. I grew up in roundups. I have that small town spirit. Let's find the most efficient path forward. And so when we talk about critical minerals, there's a strong argument and significant interest in pursuing critical mineral development in maybe Superfund sites and other legacy mine sites. So we talk about tailings. This kind of development can provide a domestic supply of these vital minerals while simultaneously aiding in the environmental remediation process at these contaminated sites. I think that's an exciting opportunity, and I've been working closely with the governor's office as well as our federal counterparts on Montana's in a great position here. What can we do to incentivize this and move this forward?
Boy, I bet you you love it when your outcome you can label win-win, so to speak.
Absolutely, yeah. And this is when I really see as a win-win. I've been working with some national organizations to talk about, you know, right now there is some regulatory uncertainty when we talk about critical minerals, rare earth minerals, all those different umbrellas. So, you know, when we talk about regulations for developing critical minerals from legacy mine waste sites, that really involves applying some existing mining regulations while at the same time trying to streamline rules and address some of these specific challenges like historic liability and environmental permitting. And that's not always the quickest path forward. So I think that's important that we talk about that. And so right now as an agency, we're grappling with questions about how the extraction of these minerals is permitted and regulated. And we're learning really quickly that it's not a simple answer. And I always hate to give, I'm not an attorney, but this is a true attorney answer when people say, well, how do you regulate critical minerals? And I get to say, well, it depends. And, you know, just to give some examples, some of these minerals are going to largely fall under our Metal Mine Reclamation Act, and that's outlined in Title 82, Chapter 4, Part 3. Sorry to geek out, but that's for extraction activities, and those are things that fall under that more traditional method of mining. And again, not always the fastest process. I think it's fair to say permitting a new mine can take upwards of 10 years in Montana. Exploration, however, can be much quicker. But then when we talk about other scenarios, a proposal was made to remove carbon waste that was buried on site at a mine that's regulated under the hard rock mining permit. Is this mining in Montana? Yeah, the carbon material is a waste material, so that makes sense. That follows under that act. But in another scenario, an applicant asked if they could remove slag from a former smelter site. Is that mining? And in that instance, the answer is no, because the purpose of the Montana Mining Regulatory Act is the reclamation of land disturbed by mining. Smelting doesn't fall under that umbrella, and that byproduct slag isn't covered under the law. So it's really dependent upon what folks are looking at. And that's what we've been having some good conversations with Montana's Mining Association and our federal counterparts about. How can we provide more certainty for those folks who are exploring these exciting opportunities?
I have a little more than 2 minutes left. Download 2 minutes worth of your thoughts, DEQ Director Sonia Nowakowski, on data centers.
Oh, absolutely. You know, data centers have been an important part of the task force discussion. That is not what the task force is only about, but that is a piece. Those are those new large loads that we're hearing a lot about and trying to thread the needle and ensure that those move forward in a way that protects ratepayers and also is protective of the environment. And so one of the key things that has come out of the Energy Task Force is education. People need to better understand what laws are in place. And so to that end, we have decided the task force is going to have some open houses around the state. The first one will be in Butte on February 25th. We're going to have tables set up to talk about water quality, water quantity, taxes. Northwestern Energy will be there twofold, to kind of teach and share and to listen and learn. I want to know what Montanans are concerned about when they hear data centers. What's worrisome to them? And are there shortcomings in our laws that we need to talk about? And I also want to share, though, a little bit what laws we have in place to protect against some of those concerns. So really excited to kind of get out there, listen, learn, teach, share.
Do we, are we dealing with, this is 30 seconds, are we dealing with a lot of misinformation out there about them?
Yes, I don't even know where to start on that question. Yeah. It's really troublesome to see the spin and the rocks kind of being thrown from the sidelines where we have this task force where we want to make meaningful change. And if there are shortcomings in the law, that's what we need to know about.
I think I really appreciate that approach. You know, what is working, what isn't, and what do we do about it? And, you know, and being all inclusive about it as well. I know that's a really big part of your job and your mission and your passion, too, as an agency director. Sonia, thank you. I wish we had more time. How about you come on back?
It has been a pleasure to be here this morning, and I'd be happy to, especially as the task force comes out with some of its recommendations. I'm really excited about next steps.
You got to leave us with, what are you going to do for fun? What do you do for fun?
You bet. Well, I've got a son who's a basketball player, so my fun is sitting in a gym, heading to Kalispell. Go Bruins.
Nice. Are you loud? Do people know it's you in the stands?
Unfortunately, yes.
Get away. Way to go, Mom. Sonia, thank you so much. Good luck in what you do. Appreciate that. We all need this work. We need to be efficient and done well. And I think you guys have done a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Good to chat with you. That was Sonia Nowakowski again, deq.mt.gov, for a lot of information on that website. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.